I'm back! Episode 440 here on the Flip Empire Show.
Welcome to the Flip Empire Show, bringing you the interviews, strategies, and insights for smart real estate investors. Prepare to dive into the minds of real estate's heavy hitters and gain the cutting-edge expertise you need to scale and grow your real estate empire. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
Before we dive into today's masterclass expert interview, I want to let you know that this show is sponsored by Ascend, our in-house assembly of success-minded people, business owners, and entrepreneurs actively collaborating together to ascend our businesses to new heights while also experiencing truly happier, more fulfilling lives at the same time. We believe it's not an either-or, but you can truly have both and. It's the unique and rare combination of mastermind coaching and community that makes Ascend so special. But it's definitely not for everyone. If you're an entrepreneur who's looking for more than your typical mastermind or coaching, and you think these things can help you accelerate your ascension from where you are today to where you want to go, while living a more meaningful and rewarding life in the process, then you can head over to ascendyoursuccess.com, click the application button, and we'll go from there. Welcome back, my friends. If this is your first time joining us, welcome. You have picked an amazing episode to tune into the Flip Empire Show here, because I am interviewing my buddy, Mr. Steve Trang from the Real Estate Disruptors. And Steve has brought absolute fire. It's funny, I posted on my social media when we did this to grab a shovel and bucket, because Steve is dropping gold nuggets. And when I tell you gold nuggets, I'm telling you that the things he reveals on this podcast are things that if you just implement one of these things, it can easily net you one or more deals a year, if not even more consistent. So what are we talking about? Steve, his expertise is sales. Number one, he's got a brokerage of over 100 agents. He's got an active investment business in one of the most competitive markets in the country, in Phoenix. His expertise is sales. He's a master closer. He's a sales trainer. And we start the episode talking about how do you convert leads to appointments and then appointments to contracts. We talk about, you know, we spend so much time as real estate investors marketing for deals, and we have overhead, and we have many of us have a team, and so it's not enough to just put in all that work to get the deal, but how do you ensure it actually gets to the closing table? And not enough people talk about how to reduce the contract fallout rate. So we talk about very, very specific strategies. So when you sign a contract with the seller, you shouldn't be rushing out the door because you got the deal and kind of, you know, you're just so happy. But there's a very specific process Steve takes you through to make sure that deal sticks and make sure that thing gets to the closing table. So how to eliminate seller's remorse effectively. He talks about the trusted advisor / scorched earth policy. And when I tell you this was fire, no pun intended, it was pretty incredible. So the scorched earth policy, we talk about that. And then Steve recently participated and competed in the Closers Olympics alongside 11 other very, very successful real estate investors. And it was a competition where they have half an hour and they get on the phone and they were judged essentially on how they handled the phone call and were they able to close, et cetera. So he actually reveals some very interesting takeaways from that experience. So I think you're really going to enjoy this and get a lot out of this episode. So let's jump right in. Steve, what's going on, my man? How are you?
Doing fantastic. How are you?
Oh, I'm great, man. I'm great. You and I were just talking a few minutes ago, and sometimes we both kind of share the experience that we pinch ourselves and say, man, how did we get so lucky? It doesn't mean that, it's always peaches and rainbows and unicorns, right? I mean,
it's not always perfect. No,
no, no. It's and usually it's never perfect, at least in my experience. And obviously we both have failed a ton. And, I posted something on social media and 100% of the people said that they learned more from the losses than they do the wins. Kind of curious on your thoughts as far as that's concerned before we get going here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I failed more than anybody else, you know, or at least to my knowledge, you know. And I think there's a point in that and a lesson in that too. But I didn't get here because I had all the answers. I got here because I had some of the answers.
Yeah.
And then I would do something with the answers I had and find out that my assumptions were wrong and then do something else. And then found more assumptions that were wrong. And eventually you get there. And the key here is taking enough action, because the guy that's trying to figure out whether what the right move is or the wrong move is going to stay there. But if you take the wrong step, you find out really quickly it's the wrong step, yep. which gets you in the direction for the right step. And so going back to the other part where I said I failed more than anybody else that I know, I'm not saying there are not people with more failures, but we all get in our minds worried about what people think of us when we fail, and no one knows when you fail. When I started my podcast, I figured I'll do 10 episodes, and if it fails, honestly, nobody will even know, because that's the definition of failure. Right. And so, again, I'm not trying to brag, say I've had more failures. It's just that other people's failures are not registering for me, and they won't register when people listening here fail. So it's okay to go out and fail.
I'm so glad you said that. I wish society would kind of ingrain more in our heads that there's nothing wrong with failure. I think, in my opinion, Steve, the only thing wrong with failure is if you don't take something away from it, mm-hmm. right? If you're going to take the L and if you're going to go through the heartache, get something from it, grow. I have learned so much more from you know, my failures, quote unquote, or the lessons learned in life than I have from the successes. And yeah. I've had many more failures than successes and wins. And so you touched on the podcast, brother. I don't know. So you don't know this, man. We recently connected and we've, you know, kind of struck up a little bit of a friendship and we've been yeah. talking here and there. I feel like you burst onto the scene like out of nowhere. You know, so talk yeah. to me. Obviously, that wasn't the case. I mean, you've been putting in a lot of years, and mm-hmm. Talk to me from your podcast, one of the most successful podcasts in our space right now. You know, your real estate business, you got a thriving brokerage. You also, you know, you guys are active on the investment side. You got a big team. Talk a little bit about your journey on this live and on this podcast. We're going to talk a lot about sales, yeah. but I want to kind of give people some context, especially if they don't know you, because from my perspective, dude, it seems like you came out of nowhere.
Right. And I appreciate that. Right. And, you know, Jim Collins talks about in the book from Good to Great is, you know, the story of the 5-year overnight success or the 10-year overnight success. And so I've shared recently, like, it seems like I came out of nowhere, but I failed for a very long time. I kind of call my first 10 years like the lost decade, you know, that the first 7 years I was constantly trying to figure out what I was doing, where I was going. And along the whole way, I was slowly improving. You know, developing myself, personal developing. You and I are in the same mastermind together. It's not cheap right. to be in this mastermind, right?
That's right.
And so we're always investing in ourselves. And so I'm the same person I was when I started the podcast. The difference is nobody knew who I was, right? So I've already, by that time, invested $250,000 into myself yeah. in personal development.
Right.
And so the podcast gave me the megaphone to let people know who I was. But I'm still the same person.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy how, you know, that 10-year overnight success, it really does feel, I don't think he could describe it any better.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting because people that don't know you, and even people that do know you, they most likely they didn't see like the failures that we've been talking about, the late nights and the stressful moments and, mm-hmm. you know, riding that income roller coaster that I think all entrepreneurs ride. And they just see now, hey, Steve Trang's got a super successful podcast. He's got tons of followers, a huge mm-hmm. audience, successful business, but they don't see what went on behind that. And I think so many people talk about wanting success and wanting yeah. more out of their life and their business, but yet is that being backed by action, right? Are they putting in at times those late nights and you know, are they doing the work? Because it's not just going to fall in your lap.
You know, in our last CG meeting, you know, Frank Cava brought up a question I thought was brilliant, you know, because everyone thinks they're a hard worker. So before he used to accept it, you know, okay, you're a hard worker, check, right? Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, when you say hard worker, what does that mean? And then one of the questions he asked, which I wrote down, was, so what do you do after you put your kids to bed? It's like, ah, right? Because when I was on my own or working crazy nights, like bedtime wasn't 10 o'clock or whatever. Like we have dinner, mm-hmm. you know, do the dishes, whatever. And then I would work on my websites until like 1:30 in the morning. Like I was doing all my own SEO. I was doing all my own pay-per-click management.
Yeah.
You know, when I was listing foreclosures for banks, you can't do appraisals during the day because like daytime is crazy time. Fires are getting put out constantly.
I get it.
So when the banks, you know, you have to do an updated appraisal every 3 weeks for bank properties. So when would I do my bank appraisals? 2 o'clock in the morning. I would regularly go to bed at 2 o'clock in the morning, finishing out my bank appraisals that were due that next day.
What year was this?
The bank appraisals, this was from 2009 to 2011.
Okay.
When I was listening, I had accounts with Bank of America, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac.
Got it. Yeah. Amazing, man. Incredible. Guys, just so you know, for those of you who are watching, we want to take your questions live. Last time I used this service, for some reason, they weren't being filtered through. So I got my Facebook up and I'm going to monitor it here. We got Kia. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Uncle Steve. Daniel says Uncle Steve. Party time, baby. So yeah, guys, we want to answer all of your questions. We want to make this interactive. I've been looking forward to this podcast. Steve has, like I said, he hasn't come out of nowhere. He's been putting in the time and the effort, and he delivers so much value on his podcast. And I know many of you that follow the show are active wholesalers, real estate investors, and you're doing a lot of direct to seller marketing. So post COVID, I have seen more contracts fall out. And, you know, Steve recently presented on this topic, and I took a lot of notes and I took a lot away from it, despite the fact that I've invested in myself a lot and I've done a lot of sales training. And he brought up a really interesting point. Steve, you said we spend some, I'm kind of paraphrasing, but you said we spend so much time, energy, and money generating leads and meeting with sellers, getting properties under contract. But yet, what's the point if they don't like actually close? Right. So we're going to get to that. But talk a little bit about your business right now. I know you guys have a retail brokerage, and then also you do direct to seller marketing. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about, you know, and I realize this is kind of a broad subject, so maybe we can pick out some topics to hone in on here. But how are you guys? What have you found has been the key to turning leads into appointments? And then eventually we can get into appointments to contracts.
Sure. So the big thing from turning leads to appointments is we have a philosophy. We sound very different on the phone than everybody else, and that's by design. It's just a lot of people are calling when they're cold calling with the same, you know, pillars. You know, what's the condition of the property? Why are you selling it? How much do you want? How soon do you want to sell? You know, and they all sound the same. You know, a lot of the scripts are, have you thought about selling your home?
Yeah.
Are you looking for a cash offer? And the biggest problem with that, is A, you sound like a lot of other people,
right?
Okay, which is at the end of the world, not really terrible. But when you ask the question, Alex, have you thought about getting a cash offer? The natural response is, well, what's your offer?
Mm-hmm.
Have you looked for a cash offer? Well, what's your offer? And that's the question. Everyone's like, how do you get past this point? Well, don't ask that question. So
pretty obvious, yeah.
All right. So what we do, you know, when we're cold calling, it would be first thing is, hello, Alex. Like, I'm your buddy. All right, hello, Alex. And like, hey. You know, you don't know who you are, but you've had friends who have called you from different phone numbers. Like, I don't know who this is. And let's just give this a second to figure out who exactly. This is, right? Yep. So hello, Alex. And you answer, hey, this is Steve. I was in your neighborhood. I've been trying to find the homeowner of this property on 123 Main Street. You're probably not the owner. And here I'm sounding exasperated. You know, you're like, no, I'm the owner. What's going on? This is the emotions we're trying to pull out when we're cold calling. It's like, what is this about? It's like, you know, if I could just take 30 seconds, tell you the reason why I'm calling. And after 30 seconds, you tell me why, if it made sense to continue the conversation, would that be fair? And you say, yes, I guess so. And then we'll start talking about, like, you know,
We're
investors, we're buying houses in the neighborhood, blah, blah, blah. I don't suppose you would consider selling it. And if they say they are, it's like, oh, why is that? And then once they start talking, it's like, Alex, hold on a second. I asked you for 30 seconds. It's been longer than 30 seconds.
Advanced agreement.
Conversation? Yeah. And then that's how we cold call.
Yeah.
And we don't ever ask them about the condition of the property because they're going to lie to you, right? It's moving ready. We don't ask them when they're going to sell because everyone says I have time. So if we know they're going to lie to us, we don't ask the question. So we get to where we need. We just find out if they're interested in selling. And if they're interested in selling, why they're interested in selling. And at that point, we'll figure out whether we're going to have an appointment or not. But the key here is we got to sound different. You know, Tony Robbins always call it pattern interrupt.
Yeah.
That's all we're doing here on the cold calling.
And Steve, when I'm listening to you, you know what also strikes me is the very casual, nonchalant, non-invasive approach, mm-hmm. which I think is where a lot of people kind of drop the ball. First of all, I've heard so many people cold call and they always ask, hi, I'm trying to get a hold of, or is this... Think about it, like people that know, you got to approach it as if you know the person. Nobody that ever called me that knows me says, hi, may I please speak to Alex? Or hi, is this Alex? Like, you just have to assume you're going to speak to the person. And I love the fact that it was, even listening to you, I could tell it's just, it's been drilled. It's so like natural, right? It's right. Very, it's non-threatening, I guess is the word I'm looking for.
Exactly. And it's by design, right? Have a good buddy, Christina Spells, you know, and her analogy is you're when you're talking to a homeowner, this is a boxing match. And you know, in the boxing match, at the beginning of every boxing match, everybody's fundamentally sound. Their gloves are up here, right? But by the end of the 12th round, you know where the gloves are. It's about stomach height or chest height.
Yeah.
And so our goal here, when we're talking to homeowners, is to get their guard from protecting their face to, you know, a position where they're vulnerable.
Let me ask you this, brother. How much of this approach changes based on the person's personality type? And you might not be able to identify that right off the bat, but do you kind of take a slightly different approach if it's a type A personality, you know, very just, you know how you, there's different profiles of
Absolutely. Can you talk a little bit about that? I would say in this stage, doesn't really make a big difference.
Okay.
At this stage, once we're talking about actually buying your home, like we're having a real conversation about buying your home, now it's the personality is 100% a factor, right? If you're a high D, I got to get to my point faster.
Yeah.
Right. If you're a high S, this is going to take a long appointment. If you're a high C, I'm just going to recognize I might not close it here. I just may not close it here. Right. Like I liken this to a beautiful mind. You might need to go to your wall and put all the comps and put the yarn or the strings connecting all the comps. I recognize this is a possibility, right? So we're just going to go as far as we can. We're going to push it, but we're not going to blow it by trying to hard close the C.
Got it. And when you guys are cold calling, by the way, I love the fact that you said that. I mean, it's so well put. When you guys are cold calling, at least for me, let me know if you guys have a little bit of a different approach. When the team is cold calling, I always tell them the goal isn't to get a contract signed on the phone when we're cold calling. Now, if that's your model, that's a little bit different, but that's not really our model. But cold calling, we're just trying to get them to raise their hand. We're trying to get them to know, like, and trust us. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to, like you said, I love that boxing analogy that Christina Spells talked about because it makes a lot of sense to me. Talk about the mindset of somebody that's listening to this, that's either cold calling or has a team cold calling. What should the mindset and the approach be?
There's two parts. It's sorting and sifting, kind of like you said. I got another buddy who says, you know, our job is not to convert. And we all feel like our job is to convert. And as a trainer in sales, right, like a lot of people just want to get better at converting. And we want to teach you the skills to convert. But before we want to teach you skills to convert, we want to teach you to figure out if this is a deal or not. Like if this is a seller or not. Because so many people are spending time building rapport, being your friend, and this and that. And you're not even a motivated seller. And if I wasted 15 minutes of my time with someone that's not a real seller, just think about it. You get two of those per hour. You've literally cut your hourly income in half, which means by definition, you've cut your annual income in half.
Wow.
Right?
So true.
So
people don't think about it that way, though.
They don't. But that's the reason why. Like for us, we go very quick and we're going to figure out yes or no very quick. If you have any pain, if you got no pain, hey, you go with a realtor and then we're going to go to the next guy.
That's right.
Right. And the second part is if there is pain, then we're closing for the appointment. We're always closing for the appointment.
Okay. Got it. And yeah, you know, John Martinez always talks about no pain, no sale. Right.
Exactly.
If the person is not in a position that they need your help, your offer's probably not going to make sense for them and point them in the right direction. Like, one of the things I've always tried to like preach to my team is we have to be a service to the seller. Like figure out how we can add value, even if that means we're not the best solution for them. If it's putting them in contact with the realtor, or if it's telling them, hey, listen, you might not even need to sell, and not using it as a sales strategy or tactic, but because it's the truth, like almost treat that seller as if they were your grandmother or a family member and you were there to serve them. Absolutely.
And I look at this kind of like when we talk to people, like, look, we're an insurance policy. We're not plan A, we're not plan B.
Yeah.
We're like all options are off the table because you're not going to get the most amount of money working with us.
Right.
So if the most amount of money is important to you, then like you should go with these other options. And we have them convince us why those other options are not on the table.
You know, and first of all, you're 1,000% spot on. And I know for a fact there's going to be people that are listening to this now or listening to this in the future and thinking to themselves, that kind of doesn't make sense. It's counterintuitive.
It's very counterintuitive, but it works.
And it actually attracts those people closer to you versus repelling them. And people think, well, no, why would I tell them to go somewhere else? It's fact, man. It's fact.
Yeah. And this has been my style. This part has been part of my style forever. And I never understood why people always trusted me so fast. And I've learned now the reason why is because I don't try to close. It's like, look, here's what we can do. You like it? Great. If you don't like it, I'm okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
You know what I think about, Steve? I think about, so back in like my college days when I was single, whenever I had a girlfriend, it feels like I had more opportunities to meet other women, right? But when I was single, it wasn't like that. And I think it's just a mindset and an approach, you know, like when you're needy and you want something so bad, sometimes by forcing it, it won't come to you. It's actually going to like
get
further pushing, apart from you.
Pushing for a sale is the best way to not get it.
Exactly. Exactly. 100%. So now that we've kind of gotten to the point of appointment, now let's talk about, you know, when you're meeting with a seller, whether it's face-to-face or even if it's on the phone, obviously with COVID, a lot of people have had to shift their business model. Yeah. This is a deep, deep topic and there's only so much we're going to be able to cover on a podcast, but what are kind of some high level bullet points that people need to know to be a more effective salesperson when they're meeting with sellers? Again, whether it's face-to-face and now they're going for the actual conversion, they're going for the contract, or if they're on the phone.
Yeah, I think there's a couple things. First, we have to close the appointment before we even start, right? Mm-hmm. So you mentioned earlier, advanced agreement. We call it establishing the rules. Okay. But basically, it's like, hey, Alex, you know, before we even start, can I just share with you how these meetings normally go? And so, yeah, that's great. Okay, so before we even start, actually, you still have about an hour, hour and a half? Because if they don't, then we're leaving.
Yeah.
Right? Because we're not going to be able to develop any kind of pain. And then they have to say, yeah, no, I've got time. Okay, great. First of all, Alex, thank you for inviting me into your home. Typically, homeowners we talk to, they want to know what this process looks like, how much they're going to get, and how soon they're going to get it.
Yeah.
Okay. And obviously, you know, for me to figure out if I'm going to buy your home, Alex, today, I need to ask you some questions. A lot of them are going to be actually pretty personal. Is that going to be a problem at all? And getting permission, right, to ask personal questions.
Yep.
And naturally, at the end of our call, our meeting, you know, one of two things is going to happen. Either I'm going to make you an offer on this house and you like it or not. And either way is totally okay. So only thing I ask, Alex, is if the price doesn't work for you or you just don't think this is a good fit between you and me, then you just go ahead and tell me it's going to be a no. Are you comfortable with that?
Super.
Likewise, if I'm not sure this is one house I'm going to be buying, are you okay if I just tell you I'm not going to buy this house?
I love it.
And if it does make sense, then let's just go. What we're going to do is I'm going to put everything in writing.
Yeah.
Is that fair? And that's what I do. I just gave you permission to say yes or no.
You know what? Obviously, I'm in the business and I know what you're doing, but even listening to you, I feel comfortable. Right. So as a seller, think about it. It's kind of threatening. You have a stranger walking into your home, you know, where you have your family likely. And this is probably the biggest transaction they're ever going to make in their life, which is selling their home. You have to make that person feel as comfortable as possible. And the way that you do it, it's just so natural. It doesn't sound scripted and it gives the person options like, hey, I'm not going to be pressured here. I'm not going to be forced into signing something. It's the exact opposite, I think, of what a lot of people do. So,
And Chris Voss talks about it, right? Like the power, giving somebody the power to say no, now they feel comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And actually, it's okay if they tell us no, because I'd rather they tell me no than I got to think about it.
That's right. That's the worst. That's the one thing you don't want to hear on a sales call or in a sales appointment is there is no, I think about it. It's either a yes or a no, you know? And if it's a no, like you said, it's perfectly fine.
It's better because now I'm not playing the follow-up game. I'm not chasing you.
That's
right. I'm not leaving a ton of voicemails.
That's right. That's right. Dude, what are some, I'm going to kind of put you on the spot a little bit, and if nothing comes to mind, that's perfectly fine. But are there any war stories, whether it's you meeting with sellers or an acquisitions person meeting with the seller, of you know, just how these were applied and or not applied, and how it could have meant a lost deal. It could have meant, because, man, I don't know about you, we've lost a ton of deals just not handling things the right way. Mm-hmm. And with time, you get better, and with more experience, you learn. But again, I don't know about you, but we have lost a lot of deals in just not properly handling things or handling an objection the right way, not making the seller feel comfortable. Just kind of curious if anything comes to mind for you.
Oh, there's many. Right. So I started doing pay-per-click back around 2012. So I had a lot of opportunities. And for me, how many deals I can't even imagine how many deals I've lost, because as even though I was a salesperson, I have an engineering background. Okay. So it's just, Alex, here are the comps. This is what I can offer you. What do you want to do? And that was working. But how many sales did I lose?
Oh, man.
I didn't connect emotionally.
Yeah.
I didn't take the time. Like, I understood you had pain. He's like, hey, I've got a foreclosure. For me, that was good enough for pain. Hey, he's got a foreclosure. There's pain. All right. Here's my offer. What do you want to do? Versus now, let's talk about the foreclosure. What's happening? Mm-hmm. Why are you in foreclosure? What have you tried to do about it? Okay. Yeah. How'd that work? Who else knows about this foreclosure? What are your other options? Like, asking all these questions. Alex, does anyone else know about this foreclosure? Is your wife complaining about it? Like, how much are you feeling this foreclosure now versus, yeah, I'm in foreclosure. So
it's a completely different ballgame from an emotional standpoint for the seller.
Right. And so this is, I wasn't doing any of those things. I was just coming in with comps. And man, I just don't know how much money I've left on the table.
Yeah.
I don't even want to count.
Yeah. Well, dude, you know, what's funny. I didn't even have like formal sales training until like 4 or 5 years ago. And so I've been in this business 15 years. So for the first decade in this business, dude, I was just kind of winging it, like just going with what I know and just not, you know, just
charisma and smile.
Yeah, man, a smile and just trying to connect with people. And but you know what's interesting, dude, you fired off easily 10 to 12 questions. Mm-hmm. In my brain, the easiest way to think about sales is you're just asking questions and you're just trying to dissect if there's a problem and if your solution can help that person. It's just about asking questions. You know, I've told my acquisitions managers in the past, when you meet with a seller, they should be doing most of the talking. You're asking questions and you're digging for pain and you're seeing, hey, can we actually help this person or not? So I think for people watching and listening, if this seems like what you don't want to do is be in your head about, oh, I have to use this tactic or this strategy here. You got to drill this and you got to role play and you got to practice so it becomes natural like it does to Steve. But it's really just about asking questions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what I find. So let's talk about now, let's kind of fast forward. And obviously there's only, again, so much we can get to. Let's start to talk about reducing the fallout rate of these contracts.
Yeah. Which,
man, I don't know. You're in a very, very competitive market in Arizona. You're in Phoenix, right?
Phoenix,
right.
The capital of the world.
So dude, here in South Florida, I don't know how it is in Phoenix, but there's a lot of sellers that will sign contracts, and it's not uncommon that a couple days later, they're signing a contract for a higher price. Mm-hmm. And here in Miami and in South Florida, man, they kind of just, they treat contracts like toilet paper sometimes, and we've taken our lumps. So talk about, you know, we've done all this work. We've spent money on marketing. We've taken the time to get to know these sellers, meet with them. We actually get a contract signed only to potentially lose it or not have it get to the closing table. Talk about some of the things that you guys are doing to reduce the fallout rate on these contracts.
Right. And so before I answer that, I just want to emphasize again, like how important this is, because you've got fixed expenses. You've got the lead acquisition, the marketing, the time it took to meet with them, the transaction time, right? You got a TC or somebody working with the loan, got escrow people working on this. And having one of these, I'm just going to assume conservatively the average assignment fee is 10K, which if it's 10K, we need to work on some other parts of sales goals as well.
Right.
Well, let's just assume conservatively it's 10K. One of those per month is over $100,000. Okay. So just this one thing can increase. And for most people, you know, increasing the revenue just a little bit increases the bottom line massively.
Oh yeah.
Right? Like you just increasing your revenue at your, just the number of that make it across the finish line could increase your profits by 30, 50, 70%. So I think this is really important. So how do we, what have we done to reduce fallout? So the first thing is when we're talking about fallout, this is signing with another wholesaler, the kids vetoing the deal, or the seller just going dark, right? 3 days before close. So what do we do? I'm just going to use the face-to-face example because we're typically belly-to-belly. So we've had this great appointment. We built this great rapport. You've agreed to sign your contract with me. So I have the contract in my hand before I walk out, which most of us like, let's walk out before he changes his mind.
Right, right. I know I used to have that mentality.
Before we walk out, I take this contract. I turn it around. I slide it back to you. Alex, what does this mean to you? And you're going to say, it's a contract. So, okay, Alex, what this means to me is we're going to avoid the foreclosure. We're going to be able to move you closer to the other school district or stay in the same school district so your kids can finish out the school year at the same school. And you're going to be able to pay off some of the credit card bills as well that you've amassed. And that's what this means to me.
Yeah.
And then you're like, yeah, that is what it means to me. Okay. If you have any hesitation, any concern at all, like whether we can get this done for you, you just do me a favor. Just go ahead and tear this contract up right now. All right. I'm not going to tear this contract up right now.
Pretty dramatic.
Right. But what happens is I've given you the option again to say no one more time, which means it's very unlikely in the next couple of weeks. Like, man, I should change his mind. I should change my mind. He took advantage of me. They're going to think, no, he gave me a chance to say no. And I didn't take him up on it. I should just finish this.
It takes it off the table.
Takes it off the table. Now, the next thing is I'm going to say, Alex, is there anybody that could possibly interfere with this contract? And you can say, and if you're going to say my daughter, my neighbor, ex-husband, whoever, and I say, okay, when you tell them that you sold your house to me, what are you going to tell them? And I'm going to tell them it's my house and I could do whatever I want. What we're doing here is we're setting up the role play so that when this does happen, they have the script ready.
Yeah.
Versus when they're like, oh, I sold my house to this investor. Why'd you sell to an investor? That they all they do is take advantage of you.
And like, you know they're going to hear that.
They're going to hear it.
Yeah.
So now they're like, oh, well, I guess I should call that investor and cancel it. Yeah. Right. So now we've removed that obstacle. And the last one is, what happens sometimes after we leave is you're going to get a call or a text message from another investor. What are you going to tell them? I already have it under contract. Okay, I just want to make sure we're on the same page. Because what happens? This is not a realtor contract. This is not like code of ethics. I'm already under contract. You can't interfere with this. Right. This is wholesaling. This is a cutthroat business.
Right.
We have people in our market that will coach sellers how to get out of contracts.
I know. Isn't that crazy, man?
It's awful.
Yeah.
So we're just practicing role-playing with the homeowner before we leave so that the three biggest problems we have, remorse, kids, other investors, we've removed those obstacles. I'm not saying this is perfect, but man, it's pretty darn close.
Yeah. Yeah. And let me tell you, man, if you have an experience to have a property under contract, you already see it closing. You're going to make X amount of dollars, and to have that fall through because somebody else steps in and they sign a contract with someone else, or they have seller's remorse and they want to back out. It's not a fun feeling. And if you've been in this business any length of time, you've probably experienced that. And by implementing some of these things that Steve is talking about, it's going to save a lot of deals. And we work too hard to not have these things get to the closing table. One of the questions that we asked that's kind of similar to what you're doing, and I love the way that you phrased it, is you said, is there any reason that you would want to change your mind or that you would want to back out of this? Mm-hmm. If they answer in the affirmative, like, yes, there is, for whatever reason, you have some work to do. In my experience, you need to kind of go back to the drawing table and you need to work through some things. Yeah. It's so much better to know at that point that they're going to back out than it is 1, 2, or 3 weeks later. Exactly. So you have to ask these types of questions. One of the things that you shared a couple of months ago, whenever it was, that I was like, dude, that's genius. And I don't know why I had never thought about that. Talk about, correct me if I'm wrong, Steve, I think if you don't get the contract, you were talking about kind of planting the seeds of red flags in the seller's head, right? Can you talk a little bit about that? I know you got into like the deposits and some of those things.
Yeah. So we basically become the trusted advisor. So what we want to do, and this sounds terrible, I have people that get upset with me in our market. Sorry.
Sorry.
I want to be friends with everybody, but when we're in front of the homeowner, I'm here to win, right? I've got people, I got to pay, I got to feed my kids. This is the real deal. We're here to win. And so what we call the trusted advisor. We've also referred it to as the scorched earth policy. And the scorched earth policy, for those of you guys who don't know, is basically the most recent example is World War II, Russia and Germany. Anytime one side invaded and then retreated, they burned everything on the way back. Like literally, it's called the scorched earth policy. And so what I'm doing is I meet with Alex. We had a good time, but this just doesn't work. Well, I'm not just going to give up and say, hey, Alex, it sounds like this isn't going to work. And you say, doesn't, I don't think so. I was like, okay, should I leave? Right. We're taking it away. Should I leave? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess so. Okay. Now we change hats, take off the investor hat. We're putting on the advisor hat. Alex, before I go, I just want to make sure that you're taken care of. Okay. There are a lot of investors that do the business a little bit differently than what we do. And I want to make sure that no one takes advantage of you. Do you have a piece of paper? Do you have a pencil? Right. So we want them to write these questions down.
Yep.
So Alex, when the next investor comes through, make sure, you know, write this down. Make sure that they're okay doing a $10,000 non-refundable earner's money deposit. Because I don't know about you, but if I'm selling my house for $180,000, but the guy doesn't have $10,000, does that concern you?
They're all going to say yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So make sure you get that. Also, you know, you want to get a proof of funds, a recent one with their name on it. This is usually a bank statement because you don't want, like, what happens when your truck is packed, you're ready to move into your next location, and you get a call from an investor that says, hey, you know, we're unable to close. Mm. How's that going to feel? Like, we're having them experience this, right? And so so make sure you get the proof of funds. What else do we do? You know, Alex, today I came to buy your house. You know, if I know we didn't come to terms, but if we did, no one else would have to come in after me. Yeah. So some of these investors, what they'll do is they'll have other investors come through and they'll call them partners, financial partners, or contractors. Yeah. So just make sure that in your contract that no one else is coming in after you, okay? Coming in after them. And if they say it's a contractor, because sometimes they'll tell you any bids, just make sure you get a registered contractor's number, you know, yeah, and a driver's license, because you don't want any strangers walking through your house.
A lot of red flags, dude. You have planted, like, you have set up so many landmines for anybody else to follow you that it's going to be very difficult for somebody else to sign an agreement with them.
And the last one is one we did yesterday, which I got an angry message on Instagram, was make sure the contract is not assignable. So if you don't see that language, just put in the contract, it's not assignable.
Game over right there.
And we're scorching earth here, right? So we're going to make some people unhappy. But here's the thing. At the end of the day, did I say anything that Alex would not tell his mom if he was meeting with an investor?
No.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, you would want your mom to be protected.
You didn't say anything disparaging about anybody else. You didn't put down any other company. You were just, that's exactly what you would tell your mom if she was going to sign a contract with somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so what's going to happen here? It's going to be one of three things. One of them is not good. The first thing is, oh my God, Steve, I don't want to go with anybody else. Where do we have to be so I can just work with you?
Mm.
Right.
What percentage of the times would you say that happens?
Not as high as we would like.
Okay. You know,
I would say probably like 10 to 20%.
All right.
Okay. The second thing is, okay, thank you very much. They'll go, disappear, shop it around, and they'll call you. Boy, you're right. Like, no one will do this. Right?
Ninja.
Right? And so we've gotten a few deals that way. Okay. The third thing is they'll actually go with somebody else. This is more than half the time. So this is not a bulletproof product, a bulletproof system. All we're trying to do is just slowly increment every bit, right? We're trying to plug as many holes as we can.
Yeah.
Right. We're not stopping the Hoover Dam or, you know, or whatever. We're just trying to increase our percentage a little bit, just because increasing, like I said, increasing your sales 10% increases your bottom line 30 to 50%.
That's right.
Right.
That's right.
So, you know, the third one happens more often where they disappear, and that's okay. But what have we also had? We've had someone say, you know what? We had an investor that we bought her house. She's like, I don't know what you're saying. Why don't you go ahead and send it to me in writing? And then I'll have Max look at it. Max is my business partner.
Okay.
And Max will look at the contract. So it doesn't have the $10,000 non-refundable and it has an assignment language.
Yeah.
So just tell them to go change that. So we've become not just trusted advisors. We're actually acting almost like attorneys.
Love that.
Right. We're reviewing other other wholesalers' contracts for her.
Yeah.
And after two of those, she's like, you know what? I want you to just buy it. And we did.
You built the level of trust with them.
Yep.
Hence trusted advisor. By the way, I just for CYA purposes, Steve didn't say we're telling the seller that we're attorneys. We're obviously not attorneys. No. And that's not what he said. Just, I want to make sure that that's super, super clear. And you didn't say that, Steve. I don't want people to get confused in any way, but I absolutely love that, dude. When I heard that, I'm like, why have we not been doing that all these years?
Yeah.
We were taking it to the extent of basically just saying, you know, it's kind of like what they call stopping the call to start the call. Okay, like now that it's over, what are you going to do? And one of the things we would always tell sellers is, you know, listen, if I can be a resource for you in any way, if I can add value, if you have any questions about working with somebody else or with a realtor and you just view me as a resource, reach out. I understand I'm not going to be able to buy your property, but I want to help however I can. If I have to connect you to XYZ, I'm happy to, like, so we're planting those seeds, but you took it a step further, man. That scorched earth approach is just, it's ninja. The way I see it, it's like you're setting up booby traps all over the place for future investors.
Yeah. And this is something that, you know, in our market that we've done, you know, over time. And I see Tommy here says, you know, like giving the Pace torch to earth statement. I mean, Pace and I, yeah, Pace started it and we just continue doing it and we try to make it bigger and better. And so absolutely.
Yep. Yep. And Anthony, that's awesome, Steve. We try to blow out others by saying not to allow signable contracts or small deposits, but your way is rock star. It is pretty kick-ass, dude. It's
and the key here is not as much talking, is like, we'll make the statements, but then we'll ask the question, like, how would you feel if that happened?
Mm.
Right, we want them to feel the despair, yeah, because it's real. Like, we know there are investors that will bail on the last minute.
That's right. Yeah, it's awesome. And if you just implemented this, if you just take the last 7 minutes and you just implement this one thing and it was able to net you one extra deal a year, is it worth it to take an extra 5 to 8 minutes to just kind of plant these booby traps and landmines? And by the way, you're actually helping the seller out. You know what I mean? Because Steve, our mentality is like, while there's others in our market that obviously are ethical and know the business and know how to do it the right way, the far majority are not, in my experience. And so you do want to protect that seller, and you know that you're approaching it with the right heart, and you know that, you know, chances are that seller does need to sell. Obviously, you want to work with them, but if for whatever reason you can't, you want to put yourself in the best position to help that person and possibly come around to work with them. So absolutely love it. Haim, mutual friend of ours, my two favorite people. Love Haim. That dude's awesome. Thank you, Haim. Appreciate you, man. Anthony, getting them to get a pen and write it down is the best part. Yeah, you know, I'm so glad that Anthony mentioned that, Steve. It's such a good point, because there's something to be said for somebody hearing it versus them physically writing them. It's almost like they internalize it more. And by the way, when you leave, they actually have that, you know, written there. It's almost like it's going to hit the fridge.
Right. And we don't personally believe in leave behinds. I know a lot of people do. Mm-hmm. We don't personally believe in leave behinds. And okay. So this is our best version of a leave behind.
Okay. Out of curiosity, and I don't want to take the conversation in a different way because this stuff is awesome. But and guys, by the way, before I ask this question to Steve, if you have any questions about sales or anything else, now's the time to fire away. We want to answer any questions you guys have. Why don't you believe in leave behinds, out of curiosity?
It's just something that could be used against us. You know,
okay.
Like, our goal here was to connect, right, and work out an agreement. In fact, we don't even bring a contract. Like, the contract's in the car. Like, when we walk in, like, there's nothing.
No, and like, your acquisition person literally is holding nothing.
Holding nothing. And, wow. Okay. And the reason why is because we want to disarm them. If you walk in with a laptop with documents, it's like, okay, this guy's coming to close with me today. This guy's a polished salesperson. You know, I need to protect myself.
Got it.
You come in like, hey, we're just here to talk, right? And then when we get them to agree, like, hey, you know, we do want to sign something, and, you know, you wouldn't be able to sign anything today. Like, I would be able to sign something today. So, okay, so if I go to my car and get the contract, you're comfortable working with that.
So good, man. So good. Are you guys, as far as attire is concerned, out of curiosity, are you guys dressed pretty casual, like, you know, jeans and a polo, shorts and a polo kind of thing?
I mean, our guys were out there yesterday wearing t-shirts.
Okay. All right. So very mom and popish, like super not non-company branded or company branded?
No.
Okay.
I mean, we have some company branded shirts, but it's whatever. I mean, yesterday they were wearing the Real Estate Disruptors t-shirts.
Got it. Got
which it. I only knew because I saw it on Instagram.
That's funny, man. That's awesome. Very cool, man. Well, hey, I want to kind of transition here. You recently participated in the Closers Olympics. Can we go there?
Yeah. Okay.
So I have, just to be totally transparent, I haven't had an opportunity to actually go through it and watch it. I was traveling, but I heard it was very interesting. I thought it was a pretty cool idea. So for people that don't know what Closers Olympics is, give them a brief 30, 40 seconds about what it was. And I'm curious, the follow-up question to that is, I'm curious what your experience was like. And if there was anything that you learned that you think can help you from a sales perspective, maybe even something you heard or saw somebody else doing.
Yeah. So Closers Olympics, we had 12 people. I'm going to rattle off as many as I can off the top of my head. Keith Everett, Quentin Flores, Elijah Rubin, Aaron Bevins, RJ Bates, myself, Steven Morales, Nick Lovano, Chris Jefferson, and I'm sure there, you know, there's a couple more, but you know, off the top of my head, that was who was in it. So we just took 12 guys. Mm-hmm. And we had a cold calling competition. I mean, not cold calling. We called it the closing competition, but it was all for all intents and purposes, basically, you know, we're calling warm leads, right?
Okay.
And everyone had 30 minutes on the clock, and then you would judge them and then figure out who would advance to round two and who would advance to the finals. And my observation, and this is something that may not be received warmly, mm-hmm. Is that none of us are special. Right? Like you watch the guys that did the calls and I see it. I saw it in the comments. Wow. These guys aren't that much better than me. And that's the point. The point is you don't have to be amazing to do well in this business.
Yeah.
Right. You know, like I've invested a lot in myself and training and so on. And so I feel like I'm pretty good, but just with my training doesn't make me 100 times better or 10 times better. It makes me like 2 or 3 times better, which mm-hmm. you look at conversions, it doesn't take a whole lot.
Yeah.
Right? And so I would say the big thing, the biggest takeaway for a lot of people was that, wow, these guys aren't magic. These guys are not, it's like when you meet your celebrity or your idol for the first time, it's like, that guy really was not as cool as I thought he was.
Sometimes you're a little disappointed, right?
Yeah. Everyone is disappointed meeting their idol. And so I think one of the biggest takeaways, which I think was awesome, with a lot of people that watch is like, wow, I can do this.
Mm.
That's great, right?
That's awesome. That's
the other thing I heard was that it was across the board. Everyone felt I was the best objection handler.
Okay.
And you like everyone, like it was like pretty much unanimous. And the great irony for me there was I didn't hear a single objection. So here's what it sounded like. I called you. Hey, Alex, I was talking to so-and-so. We're talking about buying your house, but it didn't work out. What happened? And you'll say, oh, it's not for sale anymore. I said, oh, that's great. You sold it already. No, I haven't sold it yet. It's like, oh, okay. So, but then that problem you were trying to deal with, you already solved it. No, I haven't solved it. And I don't understand.
Mm.
And then we'll find out, well, here's what's going on. It's still, they still need to sell their house. So, but what happened here? I didn't feel like I took an objection and I overcame it.
Yeah.
I just took your statement and I made you defend it. Like, right? That's all I did. And it's just very quick. I'm going to find out if this house is really not for sale or not. So if you say the house is for sale, great, you sold it. Yep, I did. Fantastic. Have a great day. Go on to the next guy. And this goes back to what I was saying, right? Like, we're not trying to waste time building a rapport.
Right.
Trying to figure out whether you need to sell or not. So they said, no, I haven't sold it yet. Oh, so you already took care of this problem. And no one has taken care of their problem. So,
again, you're just asking questions and the mentality is you're making them defend it versus you, I'm guessing you're not thinking about, hey, I have to handle this objection. You're just asking a question and making them clarify or defend their position.
Get clarity, right? Yeah. It's that, the way I look at it is I'm just an investigator, right? Like Columbo, right? Like, let's just figure out what's going on here. Is this true or not? So, you know, I'm recently learning NLP as well. And so, you know, what you talk
about linguistic programming for anybody that,
exactly. And one of the things they talk about in NLP is that our brain is very advanced, 40 megabits per second or something crazy, right? It's not a supercomputer, but it's impressive, right? But our language is rudimentary. It's like digging a pool with a plastic shovel or plastic spoon,
right?
Our words are not as good at communicating. So for me, whenever you communicate something, I'm just trying to get clarity. Yeah. And it's not like I'm being rude about it. It's just, let's find out what that means exactly.
Right.
And that's all I was doing. So for me, it's so inherently natural because I've been practicing this so much, all sorts of awkward conversations intentionally to build this reflex.
Yeah.
But it's gotten to the point where in my mind, I didn't hear an objection. But and everyone else's that was observing was like, oh, he's just great at handling objections.
That's a powerful takeaway. And one of the things that I can just give you credit and then just compliment you here is that you're super likable and you're very relatable. And I think that comes across, not like to me, it comes across on video. It comes across in some of the conversations we've had. Even the first time we spoke, you're just very down to earth is the phrase that comes to mind, but you're just likable. You're just relatable. And you're very, it's almost like the way you speak is very disarming. It's non-threatening to them.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that gives you a big leg up for people. Is there anything you heard from somebody else that is not your style or approach or been thought about doing that you found was?
RJ Bates was the talk of the town. So yeah, he was another one in there, and he is just straight high D. Let's get to it, right?
Yep.
He locked
up recently had him on the podcast, and he talked a little bit about this, by the way. So yeah.
Yeah. He locked up two contracts in 30 minutes. He called this shot. He said, prior to the close of the Olympics, I'm going to lock up two deals in the first 30 minutes. And then he did it. It was crazy. Awesome. And that's really what it was he would just go in there and he was locking up. Now, he does have a little bit of an advantage. He's an actual buyer. Right. He can commit to things that an acquisition person can't.
Yeah.
Right. He's like, you know, here's my number. Other thing he can say, look me up. My name is RJ Bates III. Not everyone can say, look me up with that kind of confidence, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah. I would be appalled if my salespeople were calling that way because right. I was just thinking, how many leads did we just blow up here?
Yeah, I get it.
But his style was dramatically different than everybody else's. Stephen Morales, you know, massive props to him. He was cool, collected, and mm-hmm. you could tell he's had a lot of practice closing with the lights on, you know, on stage in front of people because yep. You could tell he was 100% comfortable in his environment. Everyone mm-hmm. else, I think, was operating between 80 to 95% of their environment. Okay.
Yeah, because it's not common or normal that a bunch of people are watching you while you're trying
live.
To... Yeah, live wire. So it's just, but yeah, he's obviously done it from stage and he's done some different things. I thought it was a really, really unique idea and I got to go back and check it out, but I heard really good things about it. And yeah. I think, you know, listening to you, one of the takeaways or one of the things that kind of strikes me, Steve, is everybody's going to have their own style, right? You're not going to be Steve Trang. I'm not going to be RJ Bates. You have to figure out what you're comfortable and then figure out your approach and like use the strategies that Steve has talked about on this live and on this podcast, but be you. Don't try to be Steve Trang. Don't try to be RJ Bates or Steven Morales. Be you, but you can still figure out and how to use those strategies within your personality, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And that's what, you know, in my sales training, I tell people like, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, right? Like take what you can apply for you. You don't have to use all of it. Now I use almost all of what I've learned, but I've combined it from a few different places. You know, it's a lot of what I've learned and teach has come from Sandler. A good amount has also come from Chris Voss and Never Split the Difference.
Yeah.
Some of it's come from other places as well. So mm-hmm. I'm just preaching what works for me.
Yeah.
It may not be the best fit for someone else.
Right. Right. Like I think about somebody like a Grant Cardone, right? That obviously has a very, very different approach and it's worked for him. But I bet you if you probably tried that style, it probably wouldn't vibe with you. It just, that's not you. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, we got someone mentioned earlier, you know, Pace Morby, right? Great friend of mine.
Yeah.
We have the same sales trainer. Totally different on the phone.
There you go.
Totally different. Pace sounds more like RJ.
Okay. Okay. Very high D in your face.
Yeah. But we have the same sales trainer.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Steve, this has been awesome, man. Let me fire up some questions here. Guys, any questions you have, I see that there's two or three that have come through. We will answer questions until we have them. So from a sales perspective, this has been awesome, Steve. Really, really appreciate you doing this. Manly Hines, do you want me to read it or do you just want to go ahead and read it?
Yeah, I got it. So how do we find a brokerage like Stunning Homes? Man, I would say, actually, if you're in the Miami market, I would reach out to Jerry Alston. I think he started a brokerage. So I imagine he'd be okay with it. And if not, then he would probably know because he's in Miami.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, Manly, obviously I'm in Miami as well, so I can put you in contact with a few people and maybe point you in the right direction as well.
Yep.
Yep. So just reach out to me. You can hit me up on Facebook, obviously, or alex@flipempire.com. Let me see. He follows that up. I want to find a brokerage to hang my license. Manly, I got you, man. I got a couple suggestions for you if you're interested in reaching out. Awesome. Anthony Kusky, great dude, was very active on the chat here. I'm curious. Anthony brings up cold calling. What percentage of your deals, Steve, come from cold calling versus other marketing channels?
A majority of it. So okay. We only do two marketing channels. We just recently added a third. So cold calling is number one, texting is number two, and that just seems to be dying more and more all the time. And we just started pay-per-click and we locked one up yesterday.
Nice. Congrats, dude. A couple years ago, we got into pay-per-click. We were spending $2,000 a month and we went through about 7 months. We burned about $14,000 and we couldn't even get our foot in the door in the Miami market with $2,000 a month in pay-per-click spending. We quickly found out that the guys that were having success were like dropping $10,000 to $15,000 in this market to really gain traction. So I would imagine in Phoenix, a couple grand is not going to go very far, but it could be wrong.
Well, we're only spending $2,500 a month.
Okay. Well, there you go.
We were getting like about a lead a week. So we know if we spend more, we can get more. But what's crazy is like, you know, we're spending right now about $40, $45 a click. When I started in 2012, it was just me and Sean Terry. Mm-hmm. I was paying $2 a click.
The good old days.
Lead. Like when we talked about earlier how much money I've lost or left on the table, I don't even want to think about it. Like pay-per-click was easy, closing was easy, and I blew it.
You know, hindsight's always 20/20, right?
Yeah.
So, all right, let me see what else we have here. So, Tommy, appreciate it. Haim, I already brought that one up. What's up, Alex? What's up, Coach Steve? Steve, you got a bunch of students, right?
I do. Yeah, we have about 30, 40 students.
Okay. Okay, got it. And by the way, I want to spend, before we wrap this up, I want to spend a little bit of time talking about your podcast. So, obviously, we're fellow podcasters here and love your show, man. Love your show. I don't listen to too many real estate related podcasts, to be honest with you. And what's crazy is I've done 400 plus episodes. I've never once listened to one of my episodes from start to finish. But I've caught your show several times and it's very good, man. I love the live in-person feel of it. So definitely want to give a plug to your show, The Real Estate Disruptors. We'll talk a little bit about that. Let me see here. Allison's got a question. If you want to take this one.
Yeah. So after you buy all the data, unknown, high equity and so on, do we hit it multiple times, at least once a quarter? So we actually bought the entire Maricopa County, which is the Phoenix metro market, 450,000 records of everyone that's owned a house for at least 4 years or more. That's it. Like that was the criteria. If you owned your house 4 years or more, we bought the data. So we hit everybody at least once a quarter. So just to give you some metrics, we slowed down on texting a little bit. We were at one point texting 11,000 times a day. I think we're down to like 1,500 a day now.
Okay.
But our cold callers, we're at about 27,000 dials a week.
What was it? You were breaking up a little bit.
27,000 dials per week.
Wow.
Right. So we're going through that. And that's what it takes in Phoenix.
Yeah.
You know, so.
You know what's crazy? Everybody. So I bet you if you took that and you went to another market, like a Midwest market, you would probably absolutely smash it. Because it's just a different animal.
Yeah, I've been told that. And I'm planting my flag in the ground in Phoenix. And it's crazy, right? This is the hill I'm going to die on. But in my mind, if I can do 100,000 a month consistently in Phoenix, which we haven't done yet, right? We've only done it once. But if we could do 100,000 a month consistently in Phoenix, there's no reason why anyone should not come to us for sales training.
Yeah, I love it. And by the way, I'm going to change it from if to when. Because I have no doubt, dude. So there you go. All right, Mr. Hall. I'm not sure if this is Will Hall. If it is, what's up, Will?
It's like a copy and paste.
Yeah. This is a copy paste. Okay, got it. Manly, yeah. So Manly, yeah, just reach out to me, man. I got you covered. Last question I have on here, and then really quick, I'll check my Facebook in case something didn't filter through here. Daniel.
How do you avoid a seller taking control over the caller conversation? So in person is really easy, right? Is if you're... if you were to write something down, you know, and they're talking and talking, like you could just say, "Oh, Daniel, you know what? I'm trying to write this all down. Can you just give me a second?" And then you just ask your next question. It's actually really easy. On the phone, it's a little bit harder, but it's like, oh, you know, I'm a little slow. You're on chapter 12. I'm on chapter 3. Can you just help me understand? And then we just ask the next question.
Yeah. So good. So good. Again, just non-threatening. That word keeps popping up in my head for me when I listen to you. So very cool. And Mr. Hall here, Steve and Alex, love you guys. Love right back at you, man. Really, really appreciate you. This is so much value. That's this man's, this man takes the credit for all that. So thank you, brother. This has been awesome, man. I'm going to leave with a couple of questions here, and then actually let me get to the podcast first, and then we'll end the show here with a couple of questions I have for you. And these will be quick hitters. When did you launch the Real Estate Disruptors?
May of 2018. So
May of 2018. Okay.
It really just kind of took off way more than I thought. Cause I didn't know where it was going to go. Like, who would want to listen to me? I had no idea.
Apparently a lot of people, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what gave you the gall, I guess, to say, hey, you know what? I'm only going to do this thing live with people that are in Phoenix. Because when I launched mine in 2016, I would have never thought to do that. And if I did, I would say like, well, logistically, a bunch of like challenges would pop up in my head. Yeah. And obviously, you know, you've overcome those. So talk to me about the, were you doing it to just be different out there? Or like, what was the mindset?
I was doing it because I had to hold myself accountable.
Okay.
And so I know if I wait for things to be perfect, it will never happen. So I just said, we're going to do this live Wednesday, 2 p.m. every week, no matter what. I announced it, told it to the world. So now I have to do it. And wow. So that was it. I know that if I wanted to wait for it to be perfect, because if you don't I do them live, because if you do it live, people are forgiving. You can say the ums and ahs and whatever, and people don't get mad. But if you have a polished product and you have ums and ahs, people hate you.
Yeah.
So I did it live for that reason.
You know what's so interesting, man? You're gonna probably think I'm crazy. I have a company that I work with that you know takes the puts together the show notes and the audio bumpers and all that kind of stuff. When I launched the show, I asked them, do not edit or filter any out on any of my ums and ahs, because I want it to be as natural as possible. I don't want it to be this like polished product that's just not reality, right? So to this day, if you listen to my shows, you're probably going to catch some fillers, and that's on purpose. I didn't want that edited or filtered out. So
yeah.
And the other takeaway that I heard from you is that you set up your environment for success. You knew that if you didn't do it live, you were probably going to wait for the stars to align. And who knows, maybe if you would have decided not to do it live, maybe the Real Estate Disruptors wouldn't even exist today, because you would have never launched it. Yeah. And now it's a show that's listened to by a ton of people, and you've helped a bunch of people. So that's awesome. You're on Apple Podcast, I'm assuming, and a bunch of the other
Spotify, Google, YouTube.
Beautiful, beautiful, awesome, awesome. So yeah, guys, definitely check it out. Manly, thank you for the value, Alex and Steve. Right back at you, brother. So, dude, this has been awesome. So anything you want to leave us with?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, I've said this many times before, but there's never been a better time to be alive. There's not a better country to live in. So question is, why not you? You know what you need to know. Why not you? Why not take what you have and just get massive success?
So good, man. So good. Thank you, Steve. Appreciate you, my friend. Anything you need, you know I'm here for you. And guys, thanks for taking the time to join us on this live. If you have a question or comment, even if it's in the future, go ahead and fire it. And then Steve and I will just kind of keep an eye on it. So
awesome. Thank you so much for sharing this.
Have a great one, man.
Bye-bye.
That's all for this episode of the Flip Empire Show. But we have you covered with even more expertise and resources on our website. Text EMPIRE to 67076 or head over to flipempire.com to join the newsletter and gain free instant access to our video module training course called 5 Ways to Scale Your Real Estate Wholesaling Business to 6 Figures in 6 Months or Less. For more interviews, strategies, and insights for the smart real estate investor, we'll catch you next time here on the Flip Empire Show.